On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look up, think from your heart and not your pussy. It's one of my rock ballads.
Hum it for me.
Oh, I'll sing it. You are what you are. You are a canvas of life. You must retrain your pussy. Cause your pussy don't know which way to go. So you got to take control. Cause time after time, you keep making the same mistakes, thinking these niggas will last in the end. But you got to learn, my friend, to think from your heart, but not from your pussy. Think from your heart, and not from your pussy. Think from your heart, not from your pussy. Cause your pussy don't know which way to go. So you got a plan for the future.
Bresha Webb is an awesome, hysterical actress, stand-up comedian. She had me dying while I was trying to talk to her about her career and Hollywood and ambition and trying to make it in this crazy industry. She's crazy. Which is perhaps why she's making it through this crazy industry. She's been on a Black Lady sketch show, Black AF, The Last OG, Marlon, and many, many more. She knows how to keep it going in Hollywood, which is why I wanted to talk to her. You'll get half of this episode right here for free for the whole thing, and I highly recommend it because she is hilarious. Go to patreon.com/Touré Show. Patreon.com/Touré Show. And for just $5 a month, you can subscribe and get our Friday Patreon exclusive and 100% of our Wednesday episodes. All right, let's get into it. It's the awesome and hysterical Bresha Webb on Touré Show. What do you love about acting?
What do I love about acting? I love just that I can be so many different things. I never could make my mind up of who I wanted to be when I was little. I was like, I want to be a doctor. I want to be this. I want to be that. And so as an actress, I get to be all of those things.
Get to pretend to be a little bit different every day.
Every day. Yeah. So that's one thing I love, that I can just learn about new people, interact with different people. It's just, you're always in a continuous wheel of learning, you know?
What do you hate about acting?
What it does to your ego, what it does to your confidence at times, you know, it's for the glamour. You know, youth, you know, it, you know, what it does to fear, you know, I love how it makes me tackle fear, but it also makes me fearful of things I can't control. You know, when I put my all into an audition or I get my hopes up about something and it doesn't come through, and then I'm fearful to do it again. When I believe in something again, you know, the belief of self, how to keep that going and still keep your head on straight and still be a giving person and still be down to earth. It's a lot of complexities of what acting and what this business can do to your psychological mind and how to keep yourself grounded.
I mean, it seems like it would be hard to control the shape of your career.
Oh, yeah, it has nothing to do with you. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. It's how people view you. It's how, yeah, it's just so much out of your control.
I mean, you would think that the success that you have boosts the ego because, you know, you go on set, everyone's taking care of you and looking out for you and pampering you and the light goes on and everyone's listening to you. And it's all about like, you know, you and what you do and how you do it. And like, especially you're like making us laugh and like there's a great ego boost in like making people laugh. And
yeah, I mean, yeah, but I don't know. It can feed the ego, but when you don't get something that you really want or that you think you deserve, it could be a bruiser as well. I mean, so it comes with it and it has, it's all like this.
I mean, you've had a long career. You've been working a lot. You've been on a lot of big shows.
Thank you. I have.
How do you move up to the next level of the game?
You know, just taking more leaps of things that, you know, that I'm afraid to do, you know, like I just don't say no, you know, people didn't expect me to say, you know, do a drama, you know, for Fall from Grace and, you know, because they saw me as a comedic girl. So that took them into looking at me differently. And then, you know, I don't know. Now I'm so clumsy. I want to do action. I feel like that's the next step. Like, how can I be an action hero? I'm super clumsy. Yeah, let's tackle that. Yeah. You know?
So you're the sort of person who is afraid of something and says, let's go toward that. Let's do that.
Yeah, like, because even stand-up, that was something that I was petrified of doing. You know, like, it's the hardest form of entertainment.
It is.
To get on stage with a mic and make them laugh, you know, and it's terrifying if you're not prepared. That's why comics are crazy, because you are your last performance. And so you're always like running after that killer performance where you got everybody clapping and holing over. And if they don't do that, then you're like, I got to get back in it. You know, it's like an addiction. Yeah. So, I mean, that was something that I was petrified of doing and kind of just ran right into it. I was like, let's go. Like, people say I'm funny and people say I should do stand up. I just talked two of my girlfriends into doing it with me, and we still are doing it. And it's been such a big thing in my career now.
I mean, stand up, man, you're right. It is the hardest. There's no help.
No help.
There's no lights.
Nope.
There's no one else.
No background singers. No background dancers.
No light show. You know, a couple of drinks help, but it doesn't really
make that. If you take too many drinks, you can't talk. You can't.
No, I mean, like, the audience having a couple drinks.
I've done stand up at a library. Wherever there's an open mic.
Are you the sort of person, like, I feel like there's two sorts of comics. There's people who can construct good material, like the Jerry Seinfeld wordsmith sort of thing. And then there's people who are like just silly and funny, and they could read the phone book and you would laugh. And I think like Bernie Mac just comes out and he's like, I ain't scared of you, motherfucker. And you just laugh. He's right. Just funny. Which one are you?
Yeah. I mean, I like to be both. I think Bernie Mac was great at storytelling, and he had amazing catchphrases, and he could play his characters very well. You know, you just knew you were in the story when he told the story. And that's what really made him such an amazing comedian, because he had all of those things. So he could construct great jokes and great stories and then act them out with punchlines like that. You know, I ain't scared of you, mother. Like, it would just be like, ah, you know? So, I mean, that's the goal. But yeah, I think I'm just a funny person. I could just tell jokes off of somebody that's in the audience that makes me laugh. You know, like, you know, you've been up there when you run out of material and you're just having a shitty day and you just make fun of yourself. And that's funny, you know, and some of the best material comes out of it that way.
I mean, you slayed me on Black AF.
Oh my God. Thank you.
You're so funny. And some of your funniest lines, you know, this on the page is just like, whatever. But the way you say it, I think when, you know, when Rashida Jones goes off about like why she's doing this and who she is, and you're like, well, you know, or, you know, you could just say no comment. Like that'd be fine
too.
And, you know, and it's hysterical, and it's just, it's like, just the music and the voice and the silliness and the, like, you know.
Thank you very much. I'm very flattered. Thank you. Because that was like a dream, just to work with Rashida Jones and Nia Long. Like, I'm still a baby when it comes to this. Like, I grew up watching Nia Long, you know, who didn't want to be in The Best Man, you know? And Rashida Jones, like, I mean, just with all of those Judd Apatow movies and things like that. Like, she was the only Black one. She was the only Black girl. It was like, you know, you squint, you be like, she might be Caucasian, but she is Black. She is Black. She is Quincy Jones' daughter. Her sister's name is Rashida. I mean, what's her sister's name?
Kanata.
Yeah, they got Black-ass names. Like,
Rashida and Kanata are Black-ass names.
Black-ass names. Okay, so they've been repping for a long time. So I was so honored to be amongst them. And, you know, I was just a little kid in a candy shop.
This is the story you tell on there about being on the plane.
Yes.
And giving it up to the guy. What did you let? You let the guy
give me he AVI. What was it? What's the medical term? It was like, what is it? I haven't even
I'm not so saying long. It, but you know it. I think they know it.
Yeah,
and you, the medical and term. You're telling the story. You are telling the hell out of the story.
Kind of like, thank you. Just grab it.
You told the hell out of that story, and I'm just like, wow, she's hysterical.
A lot of fun that day. Just a lot of fun. But, you know, I'm so excited that people are starting to see me as straight comedy, because from what people have normally seen me in with Marlon, who is like the best that does, you know, multicam, stand up, just comedy. They just are a comedic force, just the way in mm-hmm. general. So people know me from Marlon and working with him and Sextuplets, and then Love That Girl. So people know me from a very broad mm-hmm. comedy. So it was great to see, you know, people respond to me as more centered single camera, you know, like I could just talk and be funny too. Like, just talk.
Take me back to when you were first saying to yourself, I want to do that. I want to be on stage, acting, making people laugh. What made you say that is the thing for me?
You know, I think, you know, I was raised in a theater, you know, like okay. just raised, you know, I'm a Black girl with Baptist roots. So we're very performative people, you know, so.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Baltimore City.
Oh, you went to Tupac and Jada's school.
Baltimore School for the Arts, yeah. Yeah, we are the best. Yeah, so I went to their Twigs program and their high school. So like they take the inner city kids and you audition and all that kind of stuff. So I was very much into theater and dance very early in my, you know, adolescent life. Just performing was so important. And so when I got paid for the first time doing it, I was like, oh, I just got up on stage and did some stuff, and I got paid. Like I did Fences at like a regional theater, and you know, the actors were all from New York, and there were girls auditioning from all over to play Raynell. And my mom was like, "Well, you can go." You know, I begged her to go, and I got the part. And she was like, "How did you do that?" You know, like then they started going, "Oh, okay. She's cool. She got to sing a song. She got lines." And I showed up ready. I had matinee performances. You couldn't tell me shit. And so when they gave me a check and I had a bomb summer, I said, this is what I'm doing for life. You know, So I think that was the payoff. And I thought from majority of the time I was going to do mostly drama. I thought that that was my niche, you know, I was going to do drama. So when I went to college and I graduated from California Institute of the Arts, that's what brought me here. And graduated from there with a degree. I was more like avant-garde, you know, let's be a tree and do poetry. You know, I was very artsy-fartsy with a little bit of hood shit, you know, because I'm still from Baltimore. So I thought I was crime mob and, you know, Lil Wayne and all of that with some Sarah McLachlan. I don't know. I was weird. You know, I was really weird. I don't know where I pulled Sarah McLachlan from because she didn't have a hit back when I graduated. But I liked her. But yeah, like I really thought I was going to do drama. So when I like got repped by my agents and everything, I was the drama girl. I was a teenage pregnancy girl who gets her baby taken away from Child Protective Services. You know, like that was my thing, you know, and then I did ER. And so I was mostly just drama. And then I did like a high school musical movie, singing and dancing, and then kind of bridged my way into comedy. They were just like, oh, there's this audition for comedy, you know, for Martin Lawrence to play like Tatiana Ali's friend. And I read the script and I was like, I know that this is written for Tatiana Ali, so I'm not going to read for Tatiana Ali's part. You know, or her friend, you know, I don't believe myself as Tatiana Ali's best friend. Because I was like, maybe like 20. I looked 16, 18. I didn't look like I was like out of college. And so I was like, I want to audition for I'm Unique. That's the hood rat receptionist, the Shanaynay character. I was like, they were like, you sure you want to do that? I was like, yeah, I want to be hood. Like people who don't see me that way. And I know this person, like those are my cousins. If I spend maybe 20 minutes in Baltimore City, I'm this girl sometimes. And so I dressed up and went in that room and they were like, can you come back later for the callback and go further? Went further and got more hoop earrings. And got more hood and got the part.
They loved it.
They loved it. But the one thing that they said was, you can't do this role unless you do stand up. So Bentley Kyle Evans and Martin and all of them were like, you have to do stand up in order to play I'm Unique because you have to understand these comedic beats.
Sometimes you need stories that reflect the community, the culture, the world that you love. You can get some of that on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and how to create world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is an account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective and diving into the things that we care about and the stories we want to hear that center Black perspectives. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience. Turn on NPR and listen to Black Stories, Black Truths. Because Black stories make up what it means to be in America, and stories should never be told without us. Listen to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. Great Expectations is a new novel from the New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham, a keenly observed novel about a young Black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about the main character David's 18 months working for Senator Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets all sorts of people who raise questions about history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his life in a new way and come to terms with his identity as a young Black man in America. Colin McCann says Great Expectations will be one of the most talked about novels of the year. And others have called this book epic, intimate, and brimming with brilliance. It got a starred review in Publishers Weekly, which is a big deal. And it's a coming-of-age story that takes you inside the Obama campaign like nothing else. Great Expectations is an extraordinary book, available wherever books are sold.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
Hey peeps, it's your girl, Danielle Moody, host of Woke AF Daily. Every weekday, I'm sounding the alarm and keeping you woke to all the pure evil that is going on in our country. Check me out now at patreon.com/wokeaf. Get 5 new shows every week for just $5 a month. Get woke and stay woke as fuck.
You have an advanced degree in performance, right?
What, MFA?
Yeah.
No, just a BFA.
You have a BFA. Okay. But what did you learn in college that really has stuck with you? Wow. Why are you laughing?
What did I learn? I mean,
like, that stuck with you about acting and performing and, like, what you're doing.
I know. It's weird. It's weird because CalArts at the time just... no shade, no tea, but my high school really was amazing.
Okay.
You know, and so when I came to college, I was pretty much already trained. It was just my ticket to come to Los Angeles.
Okay.
Because my parents weren't going to let me come unless I went to college. That part. But I think the one thing that it taught me in particular, and we've got some amazing students that have graduated from there, like Tiffany Boone. She's on Little Fires Everywhere. Look her up. She's great. That's my little sis. She's also from Baltimore. But anywho, I think what I learned mostly from CalArts is just more how to hustle. You know, you have your shows and things like that, but I had my own mission about what I wanted to do. Like, I knew I wanted to be in front of the camera. I did not come to California just to be a stage actress, you know, and of course you're doing Ibsen and Shakespeare and, you know, all of the classics, but like, where's the camera?
Mm.
You know, so I was like going into the film school and auditioning for them and going like, why are you guys hiring in Hollywood when you guys have a theater school right here? How to merge the two, you know, and doing some of their projects so I could have a reel. And I got my voiceover agent by doing voiceovers at school with the animation department. You know, it's a Disney school. And so I started getting into animation really heavy in college, you know, so that was mainly what I learned.
Well, what did you learn in high school since you went to this amazing sort of, you know, historic arts, performing arts high school, and you say they taught you everything you needed to know?
I mean, I think it's just don't lose yourself in your exploration of becoming an artist. Part of what makes you you is who you are, you know? And I think a lot of these conservatories try to make you into this thespian, you know? And yes, there was a time when you had to be in a very, you know, American accent, dialect, breathing from your anus type of thing. That was actually what my teacher said. You know, like, you know, there was this type of persona of a theater actress, and now you're doing television. You know, and it's so now television and film is more based off of who you are and playing it close to who you are and your true emotions and what the characters feed you instinctually. And I feel like conservatories try to get that out and try to silence who you are. So you can be a Shakespearean actress, whatever that means. And most plays that I love and most actors that I love that do Shakespeare and do most of the classic plays bring more of themselves to it. And it's not so traditional in the directorial thing. It's like, how do we make this language that was taught so long ago and was informative for cultures then, how do we make and translate that to now? And I feel like that's what my high school taught me. It was like who you are, being from the church and all of that, your life experiences make you a better performer. So don't lose that.
Has it been what you thought it would be? Has it been what you wanted it to be?
Just being out here and doing my dream and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I said I always wanted to do this. Like, I came out saying I wanted to be inside the TV. You know, I'm very amazed how, you know, God put in my spirit that I wanted to do this and that I followed him and followed my, you know, my faith steps, and it's led me here and I'm still here and working and supporting myself, you know. And, you know, I was like, you know, in LA, it's like buying a house is such a big deal, you know, when you're supporting yourself, doing what you love, and to be able to do that and to be thinking forward and being like, okay, what else do I want to do? And how else am I going to continue to prosper in this career and build a family and all of that? I mean, it's truly the dream. I mean, I'm very happy with how it's going. Of course, when you're younger, you think about how it's going to go and where I'm going to be at a certain age. And it's, I don't regret the stairs that I've taken.
I mean, whatever you choose to do in life, be it acting or sports or whatever, you have a conception of what it is before you get into it.
Oh yeah. That, I've always been based in reality about what this industry is, because I've always worked and interact with real actors. I mean, when I was younger, I was in regional theater. So I was working with actors that were living in New York and doing it, you know? So I just prayed. My prayer was, Lord, I don't want to live in my car. Okay. I don't want to get on drugs and have to live in my car and sell ads just to act. That was my prayer. So that I haven't done any of those things, I'm happy, you know, because the misconceptions or the conceptions that I knew about being an artist, where you're going to be broke, you're going to struggle, you're going to hear no's all the time, you can't trust people.
The casting couch.
So many. Yeah. You know, like, so that is what my mental was. I was always based in reality. And I think my parents were putting me around artists. And I think it was because my mom was a dancer, a professional dancer, you know, before she had me. And my dad sang and toured and did stuff. So they, even though they had regular jobs raising me, they knew the ups and downs of being an artist. And they were like, if that's what you want to do, you really have to be about your art. It's like the glam and all of this. This was secondary. I didn't even see this really ever. You know, like I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. I would love to be fabulous because I am fabulous at heart. But I was like, I have to be a part of it. It has to be the work. Mm-hmm. It has to be the work. And you have to be great at everything. You know, my mom was like, I used to play violin for 7 years. And so my mom was like, well, if you play in violin, that could be another job you can have while you're doing your other things. And so I've always had in my mind, like I have an animation show coming out this year on Fox. It's called House Broken, and it's with Lisa Kudrow and all these amazing comedic actors. But I've been doing animation for Disney for years, you know, and cartoons and Nickelodeon, like you know, I've always seen other avenues of just in the acting thing. But, you know, now that people in pandemic are looking at avenues of how do I make this work and how do I position myself to be, you know, in all these.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
Different pockets. I came here thinking about that. You know, so the industry and what this is exactly how I envisioned it. I was expecting the no's. I was expecting that I was going to have to go above and beyond. I was expecting that I was ever always going to be changing or just evolving and trying to better myself. Always keep learning about different ways to do things. Just all that. Don't go broke.
And you,
so these new babies, these babies that be like, I want to be an actress, you know, I want to go to the premieres. I was like, yeah, if you can get an invite, honey. Okay. You can't get an invite, you ain't invited. Okay.
Is there, I mean, when you talk about not going broke, is there a notion of like saving because you don't know when the next job is going to come? Might be 6 months, might be 18 months. So we got to take half this check or 60% of this check and put it aside. And what would you want? Tell us what's real.
I mean, it's a real thing. It's a real thing, you know, like finances and things like that are so important when it comes to this industry. Like, of course, you know, being successful and showing, you know, how successful you are is a part of this business as well.
Okay. Yes.
But, you know, like, you know, but it also is doing it the right way, you know, because every check isn't the check you spend, you know, like you have to get in a, and that was mainly because I was around real actors, you know, my mom's talking about she just got a chicken box. We should not celebrate that. My mom's in Baltimore. She was like, I got a chicken box and a half and half. I'm like, girl, no, you don't. You ain't getting that. Okay. Yeah, sit down some way. But yeah, I feel like being around real artists that have had peaks and valleys, and you know, it ebbs and flows, and you got to be prepared for that. Like one of them, Sally Field. I mean, because I used to like love watching E! True Hollywood Story, right? And Behind the Music. That was like my favorite pastime. Love Behind the Music. I mean, it was so many nuggets of wisdom that you could get from the Fleetwood Mac story. Mm. Okay. And from all them stories, like you'd be like, yo, this is real juicy. Never fuck at work. Don't fuck at work. Don't do that. You're going to mess up the paper. See, look at them. They was just switching all around, getting on drugs, trying to get over the. Nah, don't do that. So, yeah. So I would look at those shows and, you know, listen to them. But I remember Sally Field was saying one of the first things that she did when she moved out to LA and started working after like her first or second gig was she got a business manager. And I was like, what? You get a business manager. She was like, this is your business. And, you know, one thing you don't want to get caught up in is tax invasion when you're getting your money. You know, it's like you're your own business and you want to make sure that you're in line with a lot of the things that you're doing and being frugal and being on, you know, on par with everything that you're doing. Of course, having someone that you can trust and having someone that won't steal your money, but that also means that you have to be on top of everything too. So I never lost track of that in my mind. You know, I was like, I always have to be aware of where my money is, how it's working for me. And, you know, I come from very humble beginnings. You know, my parents are still together. I was raised in the same house that they're still in, you know, and they're seniors and those are my kids. You know, like I tell them, I'm like, y'all my kids, you know, but it's also being aware of what your goals are and how to make that work. So when you're in a peak, you save, you know, you don't have a 401k, you know, you got to put money away for your retirement. And a lot of these kids, you're just taking pictures with money. And I'm like, baby, baby.
You need that money.
Baby, put that shit in stock. Put that shit in some property. Okay?
Right.
A rental property. You know, have your money work for you. So that's the best advice I give people is like, when I make money, I'm putting money away. You know, you got to put it away. So when you are having a peak, you can look around and be like, but look at everybody still peeking. You know, you look at Jay-Z and everybody talking about paintings and things like that and how you can make money. And it's like, yeah, that's what the white people do. That's why they still working. That's why they chilling during the pandemic. Okay. They chilling.
You talk about doing an animated show. The town has had to really change because of the pandemic. And I wonder, what are some of the shifts, the improvisations, the changes that you've seen? I see sometimes people are trying to shoot things that take advantage, like that are about the pandemic, so then we don't have to, you know, be around a lot of people. But I mean, we've been going so long, the creative starts to get affected. So how is that part of it all?
You know, I'm very blessed. I will say that I've been working pretty consistently during this pandemic. And I know that that's not common for everyone else. So, your creative space does go kind of nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of comics now are doing a lot of Zoom comedy shows outside. I know my boy Kev on stage does, social distance, comedy distance. I forgot. If you look up Kev on stage on Instagram,
he's crushing it.
Yeah. He has this amazing comedy show. You pay like $10 on YouTube or for the tickets and you can watch it on YouTube. And he has all these comics that you never really get to see. Like I know this upcoming show, he has like, Gary Oldman and like, It's just like some really great comics and other comics that you don't really get to see that are always at the clubs and, you know, they can finally get off. You know, a lot of podcasts have taken off. I did a podcast with one of my best girlfriends because we just got sick of not seeing each other, even though we lived close to each other and she had her kids and it was funny. But I was like, we could just talk the shit on podcasts and people will watch it. And so, you know, that was one way to exercise our creativity and figure that out and have live chats with people. And, you know, I still don't get into the TikTokers and stuff like that. I'm trying to, but I don't even know how you look up challenges and it's just exhausting. Then you got to edit. I'm like, that is not my ministry. You know, I'm a performer. I do one thing at a time, you know, and not my ministry, but even filming during COVID, you know, like it's interesting. Like we all wear our masks and our shields. Everyone, you get comfortable not seeing people's faces. Yeah. It's like when they take down their mask or you see them far away and they take down their mask, it's like they're showing you their titty.
I know.
It's like, look at your titty.
Walking down the street the other day and I saw this woman had her mask off and she was pretty. And I was like, wow, like a woman's face. And it was like showing skin, right?
Yes. Like, for me, it's like showing an actual titty.
For more from me and Brescia, the party just continues on over at patreon.com/Touré Show. You don't want to miss the rest of this awesome interview. Thank you so much to Brescia for a fantastic interview. I really appreciate it. And thanks to you for listening. And thanks to our super producers, Britt, Marcus Harkis, Noel, Sam Montes, Jason Reynolds, Gerviel Calais, Michelle, Brenda Cox, Kathy F., Keena Murphy, Earl Dorsey, and Theo Tokis. Touré Show gives you fuel to power your dreams because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality, and this show can help. You can find me on Twitter at Touré and on Instagram at Touré Show and on Patreon at patreon.com/Touré Show. Touré Show is written by me, Touré, and produced by Jackie Garifano. Our editor is Ryan Woodhall. Our photographers are Chuck Marcus and Shanta Covington. Our booker is Claudia Jean. And we're distributed by DCP Entertainment. And we will be back on Friday and on Wednesday with more amazing guests because the man can't shut us down.